Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. Today is Thursday, March 16. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette today, Bill to Reshape Government Passes the Legislature, this by Tom Barton for the Gazette, Des Moines Bureau. A more than 1,500-page proposal by Governor Kim Reynolds to reorganize state government that would cut the number of cabinet-level state agencies from 37 to 16 and eliminate hundreds of vacant positions is headed for her signature without any significant amendment, despite efforts by Democrats. For decades, Iowans have seen state government grow beyond its means, Reynolds said in a statement. Today, the Iowa House joined me and the Iowa Senate to declare an end to bloated bureaucracy. We are making government smaller, more efficient, and more effective. We are saving taxpayer dollars and putting Iowans' needs first. Senate File 514 passed the House 58-39 with five Republicans joining Democrats in voting no. Democrats called the bill a power grab by the governor, arguing the bill will reduce government oversight and hurt the quality of government services for some Iowans. The governor is calling this a realignment bill. It is frankly a power grab that gives the governor control over currently independent offices and agencies and gives her more power to appoint friends who are not required to have experience or expertise, House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, a Democrat from Windsor Heights, said. It allows the governor to set up salary deals for cabinet-level directors while at the same time eliminating certain workplace and retirement protections for rank-and-file employees. Confirst said the bill also removes local control in some instances and puts more power in Des Moines. Iowans deserve a government that works for them and not just special interests, she said. We are not a rubber stamp. Our job is to be independent. The bill, among other provisions, would create more agency leaders who are appointed by the governor and subject to Iowa Senate confirmation, rather than being elected by state boards or commissions. 25 directors currently serve at the pleasure of the governor and are appointed by the governor, said Representative Jane Bloomingdale, Republican from Northwood, the bill's floor manager. We're adding six. This governor is not going to pick cronies or hire someone that can't do the job. She's going to hire the best people she can find, and if they don't do the job, they lose the job. The proposal also would give the governor more leeway to pay directors higher salaries, which Reynolds has said is needed to recruit and retain top talent, and streamline higher salaries by eliminating the need for bonuses. Bloomingdale said the salary scale has not increased in 15 years and that lawmakers still have oversight, insofar as the salaries awarded still must fit within the budget approved by the legislature. Democrats as well argued state employees could lose salary benefits and accrued years of service if transferred, and the bill makes changes to employment protections of some state employees. The bill would also explicitly state that the state attorney general has the authority to prosecute cases without first consulting with the county attorney, and would give the state attorney general's office exclusive jurisdiction over elections-related cases. While the proposal restates existing law, county attorneys worry it could enable the Iowa attorney general to undermine their work. House Democrats presented amendments to the bill that were voted down to strike some of the proposed changes and keep a state agency where it currently resides within state government. For example, Democrats proposed eliminating the attorney general jurisdiction language, keeping community-based corrections programs more independent of the state, and striking changes to the state consumer advocates office, the Department of the Blind, and the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services. Reynolds and Republicans have said the mergers will happen without laying off any state employees and that savings will come from eliminating more than 500 unfilled positions. A new analysis of the bill published Wednesday from the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency estimates that the reorganization would result in the elimination of 205 funded full-time equivalent positions, 9 fewer than the original estimate, and result in $12.6 million less in spending per year. Of that, $6.6 million would be from the state's general fund, while $4.4 million of the reduction would come from federal funds and $1.6 from other funds, according to the analysis. An earlier estimate from Reynolds's office predicted the bill would eliminate 513 currently vacant positions, both funded and unfunded, and save $18.6 million this year through personnel realignment. About $3 million of that would come from the state's general fund. Reynolds's office did not clarify the discrepancy between the LSA analysis and estimates provided by her office and included in recommendations made in the 68-page report produced by a Virginia-based consulting firm. Guidehouse was paid nearly $1 million by the state, which used federal pandemic relief funds. Also on the front page of this article by Sarah Watson for the Quad City Times, merger set to bring more train traffic to Iowa. The promise of a robust rail network led to federal approval of a train merger that is expected to deliver considerably more train traffic to several cities in eastern Iowa. The Surface Transportation Board, a federal regulatory authority, announced its decision Wednesday, clearing the way for the merger of Canadian Pacific and Kansas City Southern to create the first single-line freight rail network connecting Mexico, the United States, and Canada. The decision came as railroads are under intensifying scrutiny following a fiery crash that forced evacuations in Ohio last month. This is the first major rail merger in 25 years, Chairman Martin Obermann said in a news conference Wednesday. The board determined combined rail lines would bring economic and environmental benefits to the country, which outweighed what he billed as minor local concerns. We found that this merger will enhance the creation of a robust rail network, ultimately one that will be safe and environmentally friendly, Obermann said. That is why we have approved it. The merger is expected to divert more than 64,000 truckloads from the roads to rail each year, because of increased efficiencies of the single-line railway, which means train traffic is expected to gradually increase over several years along the route. According to the companies, the biggest traffic increases will be between Cibola, Iowa, and Kansas City, Missouri, adding 14.4 trains per day from 8 to roughly 22 by 2027. The train tracks run along the riverfronts of several Mississippi towns in Iowa, including Clinton, Comanche, Princeton, LeClaire, Bettendorf, Davenport, and Muscatine. The board has carefully considered the full record, weighed the public benefits against potentially harmful impacts, and imposed appropriate conditions to mitigate those impacts in its approval of the merger, a news release from the board states. The railroad industry is under pressure to improve safety in the wake of last month's Norfolk Southern derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, that created lingering health concerns. The major freight railroads have announced several steps they plan to take, but that may not be enough to satisfy regulators and members of Congress who are pushing for broad reforms. Even after this merger, the new Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railroad will be the smallest of the major freight railroads with about 20,000 miles of track. In a news release, the board acknowledged an elevated level of public concern stemming from the Norfolk Southern derailment. The board has carefully analyzed the proposed merger from a safety perspective, the statement reads. It is important to underscore that rail is by far the safest means of transporting any freight, including hazardous materials. Canadian Pacific has had just one hazardous release for 37 million miles traveled, according to the board. 10 cities, including 7 in Iowa, agreed to settlement payments from Canadian Pacific in exchange for not commenting publicly on the merger, including a $10 million payout to Davenport. Other cities that accepted agreements included Bettendorf, Muscatine, LeClaire, Clinton, Washington, and Fruitland, according to the final decision. The payments were contingent on the merger being approved, and the Surface Transportation Board set a requirement for the new rail company to fulfill those and any other agreements the railroad makes. Detractors of the merger, including Comanche and Princeton officials, continued to voice concerns that increased rail traffic and lengthened trains would delay life-saving emergency vehicles from crossing the tracks, hamper access to public amenities, and significantly increase noise and safety risk for residents and businesses along the riverfront. But in a news release, the board said average train lengths would decrease from an average of 9,551 feet if there was no merger to 7,726 feet under the merger, and there is a lower risk of hazardous spills than from truck traffic. A final environmental impact study conducted by the Office of Environmental Analysis, housed within the Surface Transportation Board, found that apart from noise, the impact of the merger would be minor or temporary. Scott County, in particular, has the most locations of any county on the route sensitive to added noise. Even with the noise mitigation recommended in the final, there will be adverse noise impacts in certain areas of Iowa, the decision reads. As a condition of the merger, the board plans to put Canadian Pacific under a 7-year monitoring period. Oberman said the board will get regular reports on train traffic and length. If concerns come to fruition, the board stands ready and has the explicit statutory authority to hear those complaints, and if the facts are established, to enter further orders to make sure that these communities are protected, Oberman said. In abbreviating the article, Oberman said the five-member board voted 4-1 Monday to approve the merger. One member, Robert Primus, issued a dissent. Turning to the Iowa Today page, Coralville hopes to broaden green infrastructure access. The city of Coralville is working to decrease barriers for lower-income and minority residents when it comes to installing green infrastructure. The Green Infrastructure Equality Project will feature an educational campaign and full-cost reimbursement for implementation of soil quality restoration practices in the project area south of Interstate 80. Green infrastructure practices include rain gardens, bioretention cells, permeable pavers, soil quality restoration, and more. Soil quality restoration improves soil health on new or existing lawns and allows the soil to absorb more rainfall. The city received 2 state grants totaling $45,000 to help with project efforts in the area bounded by I-80, the Iowa River, and Iowa Interstate Railroad. This area is home to many lower-income and minority residents, and it has a higher occurrence of localized flash flooding, according to the city. This is thought to be the first program in Iowa to address barriers to installing green infrastructure within lower-income or minoritized populations. Amy Foster, the city's stormwater coordinator, wrote, "The city last year was reviewing its stormwater program, which includes grants for homeowners who install stormwater best practices on their property. The city contributes half the cost, up to $2,000, to help homeowners incorporate water quality practices, including rain gardens, cisterns, infiltration, trenches, and more. Staff members recognized there were areas of the community where minimal or no green infrastructure was installed. The areas overlapped with parts where lower-income and underserved populations live. The city spoke with experts in local green infrastructure and social justice to identify potential barriers and how to overcome them. The 2 main barriers identified were cost and lack of knowledge. We missed the mark on educating certain sections of town, so we need to go back and fix that," Foster told the city council this week. The estimated project cost is $60,000, with the city contributing $15,000. The city received $30,000 from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources and $15,000 from the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. The Coralville City Council this week unanimously approved allowing the mayor to execute and sign the grant contracts. 2 council members were absent. The education campaign within the area will focus on informing residents about water resource concerns and how to improve local water quality in neighborhood streams and the Iowa River. The campaign will meet people where they are, Foster said. Our education campaign would be geared to accommodating all levels of understanding around watershed issues. Issues within their watershed and how people can make a positive impact, the city wrote in the proposed proposal. The city will hire and work with a consultant on the campaign. City documents outline the education campaign would be created by June 30 and begin before December 15. The other goal of the project is to install 30 soil quality restoration practices in the area at no cost to residents. Soil quality restoration is the most comprehensive, universal, and cost-effective urban stormwater practice. The soil quality restoration practices will be installed both this year and next. Also on the Iowa Today page, this by Emily Anderson. A Missouri woman was killed Monday in a crash with two other vehicles in rural Poweshiek County, according to an Iowa State Patrol crash report. Mary Cohen, 74, of Greencastle, Missouri, was driving a 2014 Buick Encore on Highway 63 on Monday afternoon just north of Malcolm. She was headed south and failed to stop at the intersection of Highway 6 and Highway 63, the report states. Cohen's car hit the back of a 2008 Chevy Silverado that was traveling west on Highway 6, being driven by Craig Plants, age 37, of Brooklyn, Iowa. The collision pushed the back of the Silverado into the eastbound lane where it and the Buick were hit by a semi-truck, being driven by Stephen Crow, age 73, of Marengo. All three vehicles came to rest on the side of the road and the Buick caught fire. Cohen was killed in the crash. Crow was injured and taken in an ambulance to a nearby hospital, according to the report. The crash remains under investigation by the Iowa State Patrol. And this AP story, French Bulldog, beloved and debated, is now the top U.S. dog breed. For the first time in three decades, the U.S. has a new favorite dog, according to the American Kennel Club. Adorable in some eyes, deplorable in others, the sturdy, push-faced, perky-eared, world-weary-looking, and distinctively droll French Bulldog became the nation's most prevalent purebred dog last year, the club announced on Wednesday. Frenchies ousted Labrador Retrievers from the top spot after a record 31 years. Why? They're comical, friendly, loving little dogs, says French Bulldog Club of America spokesperson Patty Sosa. City-friendly, with modest grooming and exercise needs, she says, they offer a lot in a small package. Yet the Frenchie's dizzying rise, it wasn't even a top 75 breed a quarter century ago, worries its fans, to say nothing of its critics. The buzzy little bulldogs have been targeted in thefts, including the 2021 shooting of a California dog walker who was squiring singer Lady Gaga's pets. There's concern that demand, plus the premium that some buyers will pay for exotic coat colors and textures, is engendering quick buck breeders and unhealthy dogs. The breed's popularity is sharpening debate over whether there's anything healthy about propagating dogs prone to breathing, spinal, eye, and skin conditions. French bulldogs can be a polarizing topic, says Dr. Carrie Stefaniak, a Glendale, Wisconsin-based veterinarian who's on the Frenchies Club Health Committee. She has treated French bulldogs with breathing difficulties, and she stresses that would-be owners need to research breeds and health testing and to recognize the problems that can be expensive to treat. But she's no Frenchie foe. She owns two and has conditioned them to run agility courses and take hilly hikes. These dogs can be very fit, can be very active, Stefaniak said. The AKC's popularity rankings cover about 200 breeds in the nation's oldest canine registry. The stats are based on nearly 716,500 puppies and other dogs newly registered last year, about one in every seven of them a Frenchie. Registration is voluntary. The most rarely owned? English foxhounds. The rankings don't count mixed breeds or designer hybrids. The AKC's top 10 are French bulldogs, Labrador retrievers, golden retrievers, German shepherds, poodles, bulldogs, Rottweilers, beagles, dachshunds, and German shorthair pointers. Turning now to the inside page, the Gazette's editorial today, 380 Express should continue. As work on the Interstate 80-380 interchange winds down, officials are looking at ways to keep the 380 Express bus going when the construction wraps up. The current funding stream ends when construction is finished, so the ahead-of-schedule project means finding long-term funding is pressing. The bus is a great option and provides a needed link between Cedar Rapids, Coralville, and Iowa City. Continuing to grow this service on a permanent basis should be a priority. We'd also like to see other cities work with the East Central Iowa Council of Governments in helping establish this as a permanent option, both in helping identifying funding and in helping build awareness the 380 Express exists. The bus provided more than 70,000 rides last year, the highest since it began in 2018. The fares are $3.50 for full fare or $1.75 for seniors and those with disabilities, meaning the bus was the most economical option for many riders. The service is particularly popular with healthcare workers commuting to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics and for students commuting to Kirkwood. Having ridden the service dozens of times, it's easy to see why. The bus service has proven itself. The drivers and schedules are good. Service is dependable, even in bad weather. Onboard Wi-Fi and coach buses with bathrooms provide convenience, comfort, and the ability to work or wind down while someone else drives. The cities can and should help ECICOG in several ways. Simple tweaks like adding the 380 Express to transit route maps and transit websites is a low-cost start. Improving signage at transit hubs to include schedules and fare information would be helpful. The service has worked well, but some longer-term tweaks may help boost ridership further. Move the Iowa City stop from the Court Street Transportation Center to the Old Capitol Town Center, where Iowa City, CAM Bus, and Coralville Transit all convene. This would create easier transfers between the systems, as well as a warm area to wait during cold weather. Increase signage about the service at the Ground Transportation Center in Cedar Rapids and other main stops. A small curbside bus stop sign, Kitty Corner, from the GTC is the only marking, making it hard for people to know the service exists, even when they are looking for it. Information about the express should also be added to transit system buses. Look at a park and ride lot near the North Liberty Interchange at Interstate 380 so the bus could make a quick stop and pick up passengers from a commuter lot with minimal additional time added to the schedule. This would attract more commuters and could eventually be a connection for bus service in North Liberty. Look at special service during Iowa football or major athletic events and the creation of a family pass. This would create an attractive option to the games or major events. Large employers at both ends of the system could look at operating shuttles during peak hours to help employees reach 380 Express stops. And again, that's the editorial from the Gazette today. Grain Processing Capital of the World is the title of the guest column today by Dwight Hughes. The Cedar Rapids area has a wonderful secret. More than 20 firms, both local and Fortune 500 companies, process corn, oats, and soybeans every day, adding exceptional value to the thousands of tillable acres of production fields surrounding the city. It is common knowledge that Iowa possesses some of the world's richest and most fertile soil. Early local pioneers began establishing mills and plants along the Cedar River to grind grain for animal and human consumption. As that industry flourished for a century, other new scientific enhancements added fuel and fiber to the manufacturing mix. Unique economic diversity, strength, and development synergized with dedicated row crop agriculture to create a massive circle of agribusiness industry. For some context, over 1,000 grain trucks deliver products daily. Over 100,000 railroad cars transfer grain and process products in and out of the city annually, and 20 different firms are listed as biotechnology companies in the community. It takes 27 Iowa counties and 6,000 acres of corn, that's over 1 million bushels a day, to meet the demand in Cedar Rapids. A third of the world's grain is produced within a 120-mile radius of Cedar Rapids, and one-third of the world grain processed happens in Cedar Rapids. That's data from Iowa State University and a University of Iowa study by MBA students. This area is considered a cluster of producers and value-added converters, similar to California's Silicon Valley, the Houston-Texas oil region, and North Carolina Research Triangle. In addition to thousands of direct jobs in grain processing, thousands more are created by service industries building and maintaining the huge mills and plants. Contractors and subcontractors provide concrete, carpentry, electrical, engineering, financial, insulation, ironwork, landscaping, millwright, plumbing, pipe fitting, roofing, sheet metal, steam fitting, site work, and the list goes on and on. Thousands and thousands of skilled craftsmen, highly trained technicians, owners and managers of regional businesses join in harmony with hundreds of farmers and their incredible support groups, creating a fantastic fabric of professionals, offering food, fiber, and fuel to the entire world, originating right here in eastern Iowa. How fortunate we are, and we are blessed to be able to celebrate all this effort with the Celebration of Agriculture event, March 27. Thank you to all the production agriculturalists, manufacturing, and agribusiness firms contributing to making our metropolitan area a nationally recognized cluster and our corridor a world-class collection of diversified corporations and family farms serving world agriculture markets. And that guest column today was submitted by Dwight Hughes, Jr., who was a nurseryman and farmer. And just one community letter today. This is titled, Hinson Reynolds Opposed Funding. A front-page article in the March 7 Cedar Rapids Gazette described the ceremony announcing the $68 million fourth phase of the ambitious project to modernize the Eastern Iowa Airport Terminal. In Governor Kim Reynolds' remarks, as shared by U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson, she said, quote, every dollar of airport capital expenditures results in about $16 back to Iowa's economy, end quote. What a wise return on investment. The article also reported that Hinson said the partnership involved in funding the airport project will pay dividends for years to come and go a long way toward keeping Cedar Rapids the best place to live and work. What Hinson and Reynolds failed to say is that the $28.3 million needed to complete this project is available because of the American Rescue Plan Act. In 2021, Reynolds called this legislation an unconstitutional stimulus bill that does nothing but bail out blue states. Hinson tweeted that it was a liberal spending bill and partisan politics, and voted against it in Congress. At the time, President Joe Biden predicted that many of those who stood up against this legislation would also be happy to stand up and take credit for the resulting projects at local ribbon-cutting ceremonies. Seems like the president was right. For many years, visitors to the Eastern Iowa Airport will benefit from those who put people over politics. Visitors will not know or care who cut the ribbon. We can expect many more similar front-page stories in the near future. And that's signed by Thomas Cook from Iowa City. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Thursday, March 16, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. And now we turn to today's obituaries. In the short notices, first from Cedar Rapids, Joyce Levon Divicki, 92, died Wednesday, March 15, Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home, Cedar Rapids. In Elgin, Jonathan Spencer, age 61, died Wednesday, March 8. Celebrate Life Iowa, Baxter, is in charge of arrangements. In Iowa City, Patricia C. Conlon, age 88, died Tuesday, March 14. Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service, Iowa City. In North English, Dallas Owen Zimmerman, age 65, died Sunday, March 12. Powell Funeral Home, North English. In Shelbsburg, George Grovert, age 81, died Wednesday, March 15. Phillips Funeral Home, Vinton. And in Tipton, Kathy Joanne Niedorf, 72, died Wednesday, March 15. Fry Funeral Home in Tipton. Turning now to the regular notices, in Cedar Rapids, James W., known as Jim or Jimmy Albert, age 71, passed away peacefully on March 12 at home in Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will be planned for this summer. Also in Cedar Rapids, Larry James Shreves. After a long battle with cancer, Larry passed peacefully in his home surrounded by family on Sunday, March 12. He was one day away from celebrating his 65th birthday and celebrated his 20th wedding anniversary with his wife Sherry on February 22nd. A celebration of life will be held from 1:30 to 4 p.m. Sunday, March 19 at New Life Community Church, 275 29th Avenue in Marion. In Cedar Rapids, Judith Jane Bunn, age 82 of Cedar Rapids, passed away Monday, March 13 at Windmill Manor in Coralville. A viewing will take place from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 17 at Brosh Chapel and the Ava Center, 2121 Bowling Street Southwest in Cedar Rapids. Memorial service will be at 1:30 p.m. Saturday, March 18 at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, located at 4300 Trail Ridge Road Southeast, with a viewing to begin at 11:30 a.m. at the church. Burial will be at Mount Vernon Cemetery. Brosh Chapel is in charge of arrangements. Also in Cedar Rapids, Cynthia, known as Cindy, Yvonne Gulliver, age 65, passed away suddenly of a heart attack Saturday, March 11, at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. A memorial will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 31st at Cedar Memorial Chapel of Memories. Also in Cedar Rapids, Roxanne Tischer, age 60, a lifelong resident of Cedar Rapids, passed away after a very long battle with cancer, March 12. Stay positive and strong. I am always there for you. Online condolences can be left at Iowa Cremation under obituaries. A celebration of life will be held at a later date for Roxanne. And in Cedar Rapids, Michael A. Schmitz, 72, a Benton County farm kid at heart and resident of Cedar Rapids, passed away March 13. Services will be held at Papich Kuba Funeral Home on Saturday, March 18. A visitation will be held at 10 a.m. and funeral service at 11. Mike will then be laid to rest at Calvary Cemetery in Van Horn, Iowa. Kevin Alsup, age 62, of Cedar Rapids, formerly of Lisbon, died on Saturday, March 11, at St. Luke's Living Center West. A celebration of life will take place at 1 p.m. Friday, March 17, with visitation beginning at 11 a.m. at Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Service in Mount Vernon. Celebrant will be Don Stevens. Burial will follow at Lisbon Cemetery. You may leave a condolence or memory at stuartbaxter.com. In Iowa City, Michael John Klug, age 68, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer a little over a year ago and died peacefully as his wife and daughter held his hands Monday, March 13. Mike was a supporter of American Friends of Chartres Cathedral in Washington, D.C., the Center for Medicare Advocacy in Connecticut, and Trinity Episcopal Church, where his funeral service will be held at noon, Monday, March 20. A reception will follow. A private burial will be at a later date. In Marion, Roxy Mae Fortner Barron passed away in her sleep on March 10. Roxy worked as a paraeducator for the Marion School District. She enjoyed going to church, crafting, and gardening. Graveside services will be held at a later date. Also in Marion, Clarence Coupler, age 84, of Marion, passed away March 13 at the Views in Marion. In agreement with his wishes, cremation has taken place. There will be no visitation or service. From North Liberty, Patricia, known as Pat Renblum, age 74, passed away March 11 after being diagnosed with cancer only 2 weeks before. To celebrate Pat's life, a remembrance service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 18, at Lansing's Oak Hill, 210 Holiday Road in Coralville, with a reception immediately following. A full obituary can be read at lansingfuneral.com. In Springville, Elvett William, known as Bill Bates, age 78, passed away on Monday, March 13, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha, after a courageous battle with lung and brain cancer. Per his wishes, he was cremated, and there will be no services. Entrusted with the arrangements is Iowa Cremation. From Oxford, Dorothy J. Spratt, age 69, a longtime resident of Oxford, died Tuesday, March 14, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House in Hiawatha. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, March 16, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Oxford, where there will be a time of visitation from 9 a.m. until services on Thursday. Burial will take place at Mount Calvary Cemetery near Oxford. Donations in her memory may be made to St. Mary's Catholic Church. For a complete obituary, visit gayandshia.com. From Northport, Florida, Lee Allen DeWitt, age 75, passed away Wednesday, March 8. He was born December 17, 1947, in Cedar Rapids. There will be a small service in Florida on March 15, and an additional service in Cedar Rapids at a place and time yet to be determined. From Venice, Florida, Ronald Grunewald was born May 12, 1943 in Maquoketa and died February 23 in Venice, Florida, surrounded by his wife and daughters after a short battle with esophageal cancer. He will be interred at the Sarasota National Cemetery in Sarasota, Florida, March 27 at 1 p.m. A reception will follow in the Activity Building at Country Club Estates in Venice from 3 to 5 p.m. There will also be a celebration of life from 1 to 5 p.m. May 20th at the Fraternal Order of Eagles, 1735 11th Street Northwest in Cedar Rapids. Memorials may be made to Tidewell Hospice or Trinity Lutheran Church or the charity of the giver's choice. In LaBelle, Missouri, Ada Sturtz Shepley, age 99, of LaBelle, Missouri, formerly of Marion, Iowa, passed away March 11 in the care of LaBelle Care Center. Ada was born August 18, 1923. The family will hold a private service at a later date. And from Columbus Junction, Connie Jean Abbott Robertson passed away Monday, March 13, following a courageous battle from complications of multiple seizures and a recent stroke. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, March 17th at the Snyder and Hollenbaugh Funeral and Cremation Service of Columbus Junction. Burial will follow the service at Columbus City Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 16, at the funeral home. Turning to the sports page, no area sports to report on the high school front. Area events of interest today include in college wrestling, it's the NCAA championship in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and also men's and women's college basketball NCAA tournaments are beginning. If you're listening on the radio, you can hear NCAA tournament round-robin coverage starting at 10 a.m. on KGYM. Turning to the hoopla section, in the food category, Tipsy Tomato is the title of this article by Elijah Desius. A new pizza place in Cedar Rapids is bringing an elevated type of personal pizza to town. Tipsy Tomato, one of the latest offerings from Epic Catering's ever-evolving portfolio of restaurants, opened on February 9 as the second restaurant in a planned triplex. It joins Midtown Reserve, its upscale sibling, which opened next door in October. Separated by only a wall, Midtown's high-end wine list bleeds over to Epic Catering's other holding in a couple ways, in name and through recipes. The concept started with the idea to incorporate alcohol flavor profiles into small pizza recipes. While alcoholic beverage offerings remain limited as the new concept gets off the ground and the booze in recipes is burned off during the cooking process, Tipsy Tomato's menu isn't a buzzkill. "We're trying to give a lot more than what you'd think of at a pizza place," executive chef Sam Crone said. "It's a super fresh, super healthy goal." With a fresh and wholesome ingredient focus, Tipsy Tomato is bringing a new niche to the Med Quarter District, Oak Hill Jackson neighborhood, and adjacent downtown Cedar Rapids. There, the chef with classical French training is baking Italian and American fusions inside a circular Greek-style oven, where diners can see pizzas rotate in the open concept kitchen. Ranging from $12 to $16, order American classics like the pepperoni. Upcycled Midwestern classics like the taco pizza with arugula, cilantro, and cotija cheese, or Italian classics like the margarita with fresh mozzarella, basil, and garlic butter. In brief, if you go, it's called Tipsy Tomato, located at 319 7th Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids. Hours are 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday. They're closed on Sunday. They do have a Facebook presence, Tipsy Tomato CR. The phone number there is 319-200-4390. Also in the food category, chew on this. Elijah Desius's column is titled, "Scooters Opens Its First Coralville Location." In an ever-growing list of expansions across the corridor, Scooters Coffee has just opened its first location in Coralville at 802 First Avenue. The grand opening was held March 10. The newly constructed drive-through location, where a BP gas station previously stood, lies between Casa Azul Restaurant and Super 7 Motel. The location, owned and operated by Mark Holtkamp, is part of the growing Nebraska-based chain's more than 500 locations in 28 states. Scooters plans to open many more locations nationwide throughout 2023, with commitments for new store builds in 30 states. Over the past few years, Scooters has opened multiple locations across Cedar Rapids, Hiawatha, Iowa City, and Marion. The Iowa Eats Food and Drink Festival will bring foodies, chefs, and artisans together for an event being billed as the first of its kind in eastern Iowa. The inaugural event, hosted by Silos and Smokestacks National Heritage Area, will be held April 1 at the Waterloo Convention Center, 200 West 4th Street in Waterloo. Iowa Eats features an all-Iowa showing of food and beverages made by and with local Iowa chefs, authors, and ag products. Attendees can enjoy tastings, cooking and product demonstrations at exhibitor booths, classes led by industry experts, and live entertainment. Silos and Smokestacks' mission is to tell the agriculture story. "We want everyone to know how important agriculture is to their daily lives," said Kara Miller, executive director for Silos and Smokestacks. "What better way to highlight that than to showcase Iowa agriculture, food, and drink products? Everyone eats." Mo Kaysen, a Des Moines barbecue pitmaster, will headline the main stage presentation by telling how he got his start in barbecue and teaching a class on the best way to barbecue. The self-taught expert has been a contestant, judge, and star on Destination America's Pit Masters and BBQ Pit Wars. Also a judge on Smoked, and he hosts World of Flavor with Big Mo Kaysen on the Disney Plus channel. I'm really excited about the opportunity Iowa Eats will give some of the smaller mom-and-pop businesses, highlighting their great products, Miller said. Not only will it grow their businesses, but it will help Iowans see they don't have to go far to get quality food and beverages. Advance tickets are available online at iowaeatsfestival.com. Tickets are $10. Tickets will include food and beverage samples. Children under 5 are free. In the arts and exhibits category, under Illustrating Steel, a retrospective exhibition featuring 45 years of illustrative intaglio printmaking and painting by Priscilla Steele is available. That can be seen at an opening reception from 6 to 8 p.m. today. That is at the Steele Gallery, 1064 7th Avenue in Marion. And a continuation in the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art, Built This Way, Architecture in Art. This exhibit looks at the appearance of architecture in art from the museum's collection. That's on the first floor galleries and is available through May 14. Chungi Chu, Visionary, a celebration of the work of Chungi Chu, who taught jewelry making and metalsmithing at the University of Iowa. That exhibit is available through October 8 and Through the Lens, Photography After 1950 from the collection, and that is available through April 30th. Those are available, again, at the Cedar Rapids Museum of Art. The National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library, located at 1400 Inspiration Place Southwest in Cedar Rapids, has exhibits titled Beautiful Slovakia, Slovak Landmarks and Towns, and that is available at the Anderson Gallery. Magic and Mystery, Mardi Gras and Carnival Traditions, Czech and Slovak Carnival Masks and Costumes, as well as beaded parade costumes from the American South, and that's available through Sunday at the Petrick Gallery. In the music category, Cedar Rapids native Jennera Kellerman is a mezzo-soprano powerhouse performing each of the roles of Amneris, Mama Lucia, and Carmen with the Cedar Rapids Opera in years past. Kellerman, based in the New York vicinity, returns to Cedar Rapids at 7 p.m. March 23 to sing the music of Czech composer Antonín Dvořák at the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library. The program, presented in the museum's Rozic Grand Hall, includes Dvorak's Roma songs, 7 dark and rich works, his evening songs, sung in Czech, and his biblical songs. Cedar Rapids Opera founder Daniel Kleinecht will accompany on piano. Tickets are $20. The concert will be repeated at 7 p.m. March 24 at St. Wenceslaus Catholic Church in Spillville, where Dvorak played and composed music in the summer of 1893. Audience members will sit in the chapel where he sat, hear the organ he played, and listen to songs he composed in the space where he wrote. Admission there is by donation. And in Maquoketa, Roy Orbison tribute. David Kay wraps his voice around Roy Orbison's multi-octave range, plays guitar and piano, and brings a band with real strings, just like on Orbison's records, for a tour of musical memories put to videos. This tribute show is coming to the Onward Fine Arts Center, 1215 East Platt Street in Maquoketa, 7 p.m. on Saturday. The show includes hits from the 50s and 60s, bebop and rockabilly to Orbison's dramatic ballads, recorded by others like Blue Bayou and Pretty Woman, up to the traveling Wilburys of the 80s. Minnesota-based David Kay will also share tidbits from Orbison's career. David Kay has recorded with Joey Mulland of Badfinger and with Phil Solomon of the Rembrandts. Tickets are $22 for adults and $13 in advance, or $25 for adults and $15 for students at the door. Also in the music category, Croce Plays Croce, featuring A.J. Croce. That takes place at the Paramount Theater 7:30 p.m., March 23, tickets there are $38 to $46. The artist has a website, ajcrocemusic.com. A.J. Croce, now 51, was 8 days shy of his second birthday when his father died in a plane crash following a concert in Natchitoches, Louisiana. But Jim Croce left Adrian James the gift of music along with a love letter he penned for him, the sadly prophetic Time in a Bottle. Having any song written for you, whether it's a famous song or not, is really an honor and humbling, Croce said by phone from his home in Nashville, shortly before launching another leg of his Croce Plays Croce tour. The concert, a mix of his father's music and his own, is coming to the Paramount Theater in Cedar Rapids. Again, that's March 23. Turning to the weather category, the Beyond the Weather story by meteorologist Joe Winters today, March is providing us with some ups and downs in temperatures. This also brings quite an active weather into the state. If you can find a quiet time during the month at night, take a look at planetary views beyond the weather. The moon makes a nice target the next couple of mornings in the southeast sky. When you find it, you will find the constellation Sagittarius. This weekend is the time to look near the horizon at the waning crescent moon. Check out the southeast sky and you'll see the planet Saturn near the moon. Evening viewers can see Jupiter and Venus near the moon later next week on the western horizon. Rain likely today with wind out of the south at 10 to 20. Cedar Rapids looking for a high of 47 today and a low of 22. Normally our high is 46 and that low is 27. Cedar Rapids set a record high of 82 degrees in 2012 and a record low of 3 below zero in 1900. Windy and cold the next few days with highs in the high 20s. Sunday, mostly sunny. That sun may peek through with a high of 37 and a low of 20. We are in the waning crescent moon phase with moon rise at 5:13 a.m. and moon set at 2:15 p.m. Sunset tonight at 7:15 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 7:14 a.m. That gives us 11 hours and 59 minutes of daylight. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Thursday, March 16. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening and have a great, safe day.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine, that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although S-ketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for S-ketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that S-ketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.